Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piper, and I have a black eye. I feel that it is only polite to acknowledge it. It's already a few weeks old. I slipped on ice and face planted, but nothing broken, nothing but a very, very badass looking black eye to show for it, which is getting better and better every day. So as I was saying, I am delighted to give you a short talk on one of the four qualities of the compassionate mind. We'll talk about the first one this week and then the second one in 2 weeks and so forth and so on. And then we'll close with a short guided meditation practice because that's where it all really comes together. And though I had decided on these topics a few weeks ago, today, making this first video is a few days after the passing of the great Zen master and compassion genius, Thich Nhat Hanh, who passed away at the age of 95, just a few days ago, like I say. And so it is entirely appropriate and indeed a tribute to him, in my mind, to enter this conversation with you about cultivating a mind of compassion and the four qualities that you already possess, by the way, so don't worry about trying to become someone else. The four qualities that create the mind of compassion and lead to the life of a bodhisattva or awakened being. And Thich Nhat Hanh was a great and profound and perhaps even once in a lifetime exemplar of true bodhisattva activity. Bodhisattva, awakened being, one who is here to bring benefit to the world. And that can look like anything. Maybe you're, you know, president of a country and you're doing your best for all the people of your country. That's great. Maybe you're taking care of stray cats in the backyard. That counts. Maybe you're just doing your best to be kind to anyone and everyone you encounter in the course of daily life. That's probably the best. And I want to point out before we get into this discussion too far, that compassion, the mind of compassion, is not the mind of niceness or being sweetness and light. No. Thich Nhat Hanh in particular was unstinting, uncompromising, absolutely committed to love, sweet and fierce, as something that is possible in every situation, no matter how harsh. So sweet, we all know what that means. Just being kind and lovely and considerate and so on. But love can also arise in a very different form that I call fierce. Fierce love can mean calling someone out or in, refusing to ignore injustice and indecency and worse. It can mean doing nothing. It can mean doing nothing. How do you know whether the love that is required in a given situation is sweet or fierce or withheld? I don't know, but I suggest that a good place to start is by being awake, paying attention, noticing what is now. And then because of the way you're built organically, this is my opinion, also the opinion of the Buddha, so I'm not alone here. When you're awake and connected to now, your heart naturally wants to offer something beneficial. Now, being connected to now, whatever that means, involves something quite difficult and profound. It means setting down your projections and critiques and judgments. Not forever, but taking them out of the center of the focus as being the very definition of what is happening. Now that's a tall order, because our minds are filled, my mind certainly, with projections and ideas and critiques and so on. And instead of seeing what is actually happening right in front of me, I see what they mean to me. I see my projections of those things. And so, you know, that's entirely helpful, because we're navigating a very complex world and our critiques and judgments and so on are essential, but they're not the only thing that can be useful. And in fact, they are obstacles to the path of compassion. So I once had this sort of image, I guess, that as I go through my life, it's as if there's a lens planted in the center of my forehead, and some movie or movies, and some of these movies are quite brilliant, are running constantly in my mind, wherever that might be. And wherever I look, I project through this lens my movie. This means that, that means this. Oh, you walk through the screen, you walk through the frame. I don't care, you're an extra. You walk through the frame, I like you, okay. You're cast as my friend, and so forth and so on. So compassion, you could say, begins not with replacing the movie with a better movie, but by turning the projector off. How do you do that? Well, I don't know, but meditation practice really helps. So just something to think of as we begin this exploration of the four qualities that lead to the mind of compassion. The first, which we're going to explore today, is called affection for the world. And I'm sure you have that sometimes and sometimes not, but I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Affection for the world is the equivalent of turning off the projector. Those are my words. So, you know, don't take my word for anything, but investigate for yourself. Turning off the projector is the equivalent of turning off aggression. Because when we place our meaning on everything, that's a form of aggression, in the sense that I'm not letting it be what it is. I'm telling it what it is. And affection for the world means you stop doing that in moments, because you can't just go, hey, stop that, and then you never do that again. It's just more complicated than that. In a sense, you walk out into your day or wake up into your home with a sense of appreciation and respect for what you encounter. That doesn't mean like. When I face planted on the pavement, I did not like that. I didn't appreciate that, like, oh, that's a great learning experience. Actually, it was all consuming for a few moments. I didn't know what happened. I was just walking along, and then I had fallen on ice. And so I wasn't like, yay, that's a great experience. But I just felt it. It hurt. And actually, I noticed I sat on a curb because I fell into the street. And then I sat on the curb and I heard like moaning. And it was me. I was feeling, because you can't not feel it when you fall on the pavement. And that's not compassion particularly, but in a sense, it is meeting what is, and then responding, engaging. Of course, you know, moments later, I was like, oh, I think I'm bleeding, and how am I going to get home, and this hurts, and all those things, which anybody would think. But for a moment, all of that was blotted out, and I just was with what happened. And when something you know, surprising or terrible, or this is a mild, very mild form of terrible, happens, all of our projections and judgments and so forth are blotted out. Now, within 10 minutes, I was going, what was wrong with me? Did I not see the ice, or I'm such a klutz, or I kept trying to find explanations for what happened. Maybe I have a horrible disease that made me fall down. That's just me, my mind. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that what precludes affection for the world is feeling a sense of separation from the world. When something, you know, mildly shocking happens, like you fall down, in my case, quite mild, that separation is gone. You're just one with what is happening. I don't advise it particularly, but it is interesting to notice that affection for the world is more equivalent with being with than feeling kindly towards. So you can do that because you know how to meditate. And our meditation practice is a primer in affection for the world, in the sense that when we sit, which we're going to do in a moment, we notice that we're thinking at some point, because we are always thinking. That's cool. At some point, we notice we're absorbed in thought, which is not meditating. It's absorbed in thought. And then you notice that you wake up in the middle of this mind dream and you go, I'm absorbed in thought. That's great, by the way. It's awesome. It's not a sign of failure. It's a sign of success. You see it and then you let go. And you come back to this breath. Now, this breath is in the present moment, because no matter how hard you try, you can't breathe in the past and you can't breathe in the future. Although you could try it. You can only breathe right now. So when your attention is riding the breath, resting on the breath, you could say that you are training in resting in the present moment. And when you get up off the cushion and go into your life, the object is not to follow your breath. It's to follow your life. So we train with the breath on the cushion or the chair, so that we can do it off the cushion and off the chair. So it's equivalent of like playing scales as a musician. When you get up on stage, you don't play scales, but because you have played scales, you can perform. You can give something deep. So the last thing I'll say before we move into our practice is, it's a very interesting, this part of you that cuts in somehow when you're meditating and then you space out. Something says you're spaced out. What is that? Where does that come from? And if we can do it, why can't we do it all the time? I don't know the answers to those questions, but it's something, I believe, beyond what prevents us from having affection for the world, being caught up in our projections and thoughts and judgments and so on, is the obscuration that blocks affection for the world, according to this theory. But then something pops up and says, hey, look where you are. That something that cuts through discursiveness is what also cuts through projections and judgments and criticisms to bring you back to right now. So congratulations, you're a genius because you can do this. So I hope that's useful. In 2 weeks, I will be back with the second quality of the compassionate mind, which is called faith in the right situations. So I look forward to that. And now let's sit. Begin your practice, please, by taking good posture, which means sitting up straight, the sense of pride in who you are. You deserve that, certainly. The legs are crossed loosely in front of you, or the feet are flat on the floor if you're on a couch like me or a chair. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Sit up straight and let the front body soften a lot. The belly, the chest, the throat can all relax. The chin is parallel with the ground, so you're not looking up or down too much. The breath is natural, in and out through the nose. And the eyes are open. And the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front, depending on where your screen is. And we sit with our eyes open because we want to see the world in order to have affection for the world. So we're practicing being awake and present. At the same time, you're just sitting there and your eyes are open and the gaze is soft and cast down. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means feel the body breathe rather than observe the body breathe or feeling it. Feel the gentle expansion of the inhale and the letting go into the space in front of the exhale. The end of the exhale is a little gap. And I promise the next inhale just happens on its own. You do not have to try. So go with that, feeling this in-breath, this out-breath. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because that's what it does. It's no problem at all. No effort to stop thinking or change thinking, please. Just let your mind be as it is. Most of your thoughts will come and go on their own like birds in the sky. At some point, you may notice that you've become absorbed in thought to the point where you've forgotten about your breath. Again, good job. Don't just brush it away. Notice it. Label that moment silently thinking. Gently let go. Come back to this breath and begin again. Feeling the body breathe and being who you are. That's the practice. So we'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. And thank you for practicing together. I'll see you in 2 weeks.